Today's episode of Nerdy Talk is brought to you by Fuchsia, connecting Japanese performers with events around the world. Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed on Nerdy Talk do not reflect those of Anime Herald. Due to strong language, listener discretion is advised. Now sit back and enjoy the show. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's time for Nerdy Talk, the only show that's on a fast track to Midi City. I'm Mike Ferrer, and I'm joined by Matt Brown and Anthony Simpson. How you guys doing?
Actually, pretty good. For once.
I'm doing great, Michael. And actually, I want to, before we really get into anything, I want to apologize to you guys and to our listeners for what happened with the previous episode. I had the wrong microphone selected, which was kind of a rookie mistake, and I'm embarrassed about it. And the first segment of the show sounded really loud on my part, so sorry about that, and hopefully this episode is pretty much, you know, back to normal.
Yes, my apologies to all of you out there, listeners. All right, well, it's been a few weeks since we last met, so since then, we've seen the last season go, the new season come, and some really interesting stuff happened in the news lately. Our first topic of the night, Kadokawa announced that they are going to go through a pretty major restructuring. Nikkei reports that they are basically responding to what they call a rapidly cooling publishing market. And they're going to be condensing their operations down to five main divisions. Business Life and Culture, Comics and Characters, Magazine Brands, ASCII Media Works, and Enterbrain. And while some of their major labels and brand names are going to stay, a vast majority are going to be just dissolved, including their signature Kadokawa Shoten brand and Fujimi Shobo, which is what they produce light novels under. Editorial staff is going to be consolidated, condensed downward, and the company is actually encouraging early retirement among their older editors. So this is big news with some really big implications, so I wanted to bring this one up to the conversation. What are your thoughts, guys?
Well, let's start with the first thing that, I mean, the market's changing for a lot of people and a lot of different businesses, and sometimes you do have to consolidate. And we also know the publishing market is, shrinking due to, e-books and more people going, digital and, digital for, say, their books or comics that they're reading. And I mean, sometimes you do just have to, condense, and sometimes you do have to, get rid of things. I mean, that happens in business pretty often.
Absolutely. And I mean, especially with a company like Kadokawa, which is a giant hydra of companies. Like, it is child company upon child company. It's just, at points, it seems like there's no end to it. So bringing it down might be the best course of action for any real sustainability going forward.
Yeah, that's true. I just want to know now, since they're consolidating stuff, that means they're gonna stop cock blocking us and getting Blu-ray rights for shows. Which that will happen, but hey, one can dream.
I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah, I know, but one can dream.
I think the little problem that the giant publishers around the world are facing with the fact that people are not reading as much maybe has finally hit Japan in the pocketbook. Because if you look at where they're dividing everything up, it's all, business life and culture, that's like basically, weekly stuff. Comics and Characters, that's a serial format. Magazines are serial. I don't know what ASCII Media Works does, but they're definitely cutting out the fact that they're cutting out their light novel division, which is basically also a serial publication, but slightly longer than all of the others. I think that really speaks volumes. It's almost like they're reaching their logical end. Like, nobody is reading enough to even get through a light novel.
That is true.
Just to actually interject here, ASCII Media Works, they publish, they specialize in publishing books, entertainment, computer magazines, manga, and video games. Their best known one, their well known magazines include Dengeki Daioh and Dengeki G Magazine. Dengeki Bunko, which is their light novel publishing aspect. They also deal with, they mostly deal with cater to the otaku crowd. Obviously, topics covering anime, light novels, manga, plastic modeling, visual novels. They also have deals with computing and enterprise-related information technology, such as the publication of weekly ASCII, along with other PC and IT magazines.
It's like they're hunkering down, right? They see their entire customer base as basically one of two groups, salarymen and otaku.
Oh, they actually also do. Well, they also do. Should also mention they do have multiple magazines published towards females. Character Parfait, Dengeki Girl Style, and Silif or Slif. I'm not sure how that's pronounced.
Still, it's definitely going into like a very specific slice of the population there.
True.
I still find it fascinating how otaku managed to find all of that money to spend on things like that. You know, the things that they spend money on.
Hey, it just means that since the ramen noodles morning, breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day.
Yeah, don't forget their ramen noodles are better than ours.
Yeah, that's true. That's one thing I sort of missed that I never actually got a chance to try when I was over in Japan. I kind of wish I did, but
yeah, I mean these are. If you can live off ramen noodles, then the sky's the limit on what you can end up buying. But like Matt said, it seems like they're really just paring down to the niche now, which is kind of interesting because they are just entirely retreating up market here. They are completely escaping the whole idea of reaching a broad population now, which I shouldn't say that preemptively because there's also a possibility they could start releasing more general just stuff under these five departments, but at the moment, it seems like they are strictly retreating to these safe havens, which I worry it could bite them in the ass before too long.
Well, the fact that they're encouraging early retirement among their older employees is something that is literally unheard of in a Japanese company, right? That's a huge thing because that's sort of the contract with a salaryman type of living in Japan. You work for the company your entire life and you're taken care of, and that's pretty much the end of it. But if these people are being encouraged to retire before their time, that's almost like something that happened over here, earlier in my lifetime, where it's like that contract is breaking down.
Yeah, it's definitely indicative of something that's definitely wrong. There's definitely a breakdown of the social contract there that it could have implications going forward, too.
Yeah, and both good and bad, right? Like, right now, if you're a salaryman in Japan and you decide to quit your job because you hate it, and why wouldn't you? Like, they all seem to pretty much suck. You're unemployable. Nobody else will hire you.
Exactly. The only place that...
You know, a breakdown of that contract means that the other companies are free to hire you if you have the skills. And it starts to, go in the right direction. But at the same time, there's a lot less stability in that kind of format.
Absolutely. I mean, there's definitely pros and cons of each way. I mean, like you said, the only employment that person's going to have if they quit a salaryman job is in front of the subway, in front of the Shinkansen.
I don't know what that is. You have to speak in English.
The bullet train.
Okay.
Suicide.
Yeah, Mike, we're Americans here. We don't know these fancy Japanese terms.
Suicide. Death. Train go ding, ding, choo, choo, splat.
So you're talking about being a tuna. that is the term, isn't it?
Pretty much.
Oh boy, we really went dark there.
I swear to God, I didn't make that term up. I've seen it in Great Teacher Onizuka, of all places.
They'd have to stop the central line. What it, I mean, yeah. All right, moving on to something that's a little less dark than, you know, what we were just talking about. Earlier this week, Tokyo's District of Public Prosecutors and the Tokyo Regional Taxation Bureau, which is basically like their IRS, came down and charged Daisuke Umezu, the author of Log Horizon and Mayu, with a tax evasion and violation of corporate tax law. Basically, they're saying that he collected about 120 million yen in book royalties that he never reported from the sales of print versions of his books. This was over a 3-year period, and when asked about the matter, Umezu basically said, "My taxes are paid, but I can't comment." A few days later, he actually did release a public statement saying that he has been complying with the TRBT, and he's basically refiled his taxes and helped them complete their investigation in this this short apology. I really just kind of wanted to bring this up for a discussion because this was one of the big news stories of the week. So what are your thoughts on this, guys?
First, whoops. Two, I don't really know enough about Japanese tax law. I mean, I guess it's good they got it settled, but I don't know how draconian their tax laws are. If they're draconian like ours is here in the U.S., or if they're easier to understand, I don't know. Not super familiar with them.
You know, it almost sounds like they're less draconian than ours, because if our IRS charges you with a crime, you can't get off by just paying your taxes.
Yeah, that is
true. You're going to go to jail.
Yeah, that is true. It sounds like they are definitely a bit more lenient on that end.
I mean, especially we don't really know. I mean, I'm right there with Anthony. We don't really know what their tax laws are like, and I'm a little bit perplexed about why this even appeared in the news. This is not, I mean, sure, it's a financial matter, but it's not like a business happening. They're not, you know, no matter what happens as a result of this, we're not going to suddenly not see any more Log Horizon. So I don't really know why this is getting attention.
Yeah, I don't either, I guess. It's just maybe slow news week, I guess.
Yeah, it kind of was. It really kind of was. But, I mean, I could see if, you know, if we didn't get the whole retraction afterwards, it could have been a much bigger issue, because then we probably would be seeing some real, you know, jail time. But a lot of it feels like NHK was kind of sensationalizing a bit here, too.
Yeah, that does sound like it.
Yeah, it's like if this happened in America, you would be assumed to be a gangster or a drug dealer or some kind of, you know, seedy character. This guy's a manga author.
Well, I mean, some celebrities here, you know, didn't pay their tax. I mean, you know, Wesley Snipes got arrested a few years ago for tax evasion.
But nobody actually cares about that.
No.
It was
no.
I mean, that's a good point in the fact that it was news for like one day, maybe.
Yeah, well, I think he's out of jail now.
Yeah, but when was the last time people cared about Wesley Snipes?
I don't know, maybe they like Wesley Snipes films. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of him myself, but...
Hey, Blade is pretty good, but for the record, I did not give a shit that he was charged for tax evasion.
Neither did I, though I did find it funny that he did serve his term here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, true. I mean, it's actually kind of interesting, though. It really shows the difference in approaches in the two media markets, if you think about it.
the worst offenders of tax evasion in this country are the corporations. Nobody cares about the individuals because the individuals cannot possibly, cheat the government out of as much money as your run-of-the-mill large corporation does on a regular basis.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But that's...
So that's why nobody should care. It's because this is small potatoes.
True enough. All right, our last topic of the night. We're currently in the middle of the spring anime season, so we've had a chance to sit down and really get to watch at least a few shows that have everybody talking. So I want to get with you guys, see what you are watching and what your thoughts on the titles are.
Well, I'll go first. So I'm going to talk about first one I'm going to talk about is actually, it's my second favorite show of the season. And that is Show by Rock, which is one of the two shows produced by Bones this season.
Didn't you also say the show was going to flop?
I said it could. It could, depending on how it progresses, but I'm going to talk about that a little bit. So our show starts with this girl, Hajiri Kala, who's a first year high school student. And she wants to join her school's music club, but she's just too darn shy to do so. She just can't do it. So one night at home, she's playing a rhythm game on her phone and wins something called Strawberry Guitar. And when she does so, she gets sucked into the game she's playing. And she ends up in this place called Midi City, which is a place where basically music rules everything. That if you're the best, you get to basically play at the top of this big tower. So she gets there and she sees this band, Tricronica. Sorry if I can't pronounce that. Playing. And when she's playing it, watching them, she realizes that she's turned into a cat girl. So she's having this concert. She sort of basically gets enamored by what she sees. So when the concert's done, they get attacked by this thing called the Dark Monster, which basically tries to corrupt these Melodesian stones within the members of his band. So Sian happens to find that the Strawberry Guitar that she won appears in front of her, and she plays the guitar, and then they're able to beat the monster. So then she gets approached by Maple Arisugawa, who is the CEO of Bandit Rocking Records, who's a talking egg with a mustache, to join a recording agency. And first she's kind of not sure, and then she meets one of the two bands, either Plasmagica, which is an all-girl band. She gets asked by Ritore, who's the vocalist, the bassist, and she asks her to join, and then she does. I will say, so I'm going to start by saying that I want to know what drugs these people were on when they made this, and where I can acquire some of it. Because holy shit, is this show, like, it's campy, it's crazy, it's cheesy as hell, but I love it. Like, when I watch it, like, I could be feeling, like, down, and I get done with that, and I'm just, like, I feel so happy about it. I'm so glad I watch it. So I do want to mention a few things about the show first. When she goes to the game world, Midi City, all the people are essentially basically animal people. Like there's cat girls. Sandra herself's a cat girl who's dressed in gothic Lolita fashion, which I'll just say I don't particularly like that, but this doesn't bother me. And so that's how everybody lives in this city, Midi City, or lives in this game world, is. Another thing I want to mention is that the 3D CG that's used in this show is actually very good. When anytime there's a musical performance, for whatever reason, and I don't know why specifically, unless it's just a way to save money, all the characters turn, the characters that are playing, turn into basically chibi animal form. They're animal forms, a chibi mode. And then they're all 3D CG. They don't have any mouths. And they look really plastic-like. Like, it almost reminds you of, like, Toy Story. But the but the 3D CG characters almost really come off as Uncanny Valley. But that being said, it actually doesn't feel very janky, because that's a lot of times problems with CG and anime. It doesn't have like enough frames, so it looks really... Well, it doesn't look very good, and it looks very janky. And here, the 3D CG blends well with the 2D characters, and it actually flows really nicely. Like, it's fluid, it's not, like, you know, janky looking, it's not... doesn't slow down. Now, going forward, now I've seen the first two episodes, and I can say after the second one, this solidified, I'm going to watch this all the way through. Is that I think if it tries to take itself seriously, I think it'll ruin what the show's trying to do. I think it'll ruin it. But if it stays like this, it's kind of like the campy and craziness that it has, I think it'll be fine. Now, it's not well written. I mean, it's like I said, we've seen this, you know, person gets trapped in the game world a bunch of times. And that's, I mean, I'll admit, it's like I said, it's a bad, not bad, but it's not like a great show in terms of writing. But it's just a show that I just have so much fun watching. And I just can't feel bad when I get done with it.
So I have a couple of questions about that.
Yeah.
Is Cyan a bit slow in the uptake? Because you mentioned that she didn't realize she turned into a cat girl until, like, at least sometime afterwards when she was watching the band.
Well, I wouldn't say she's slow because she... Okay, so when she gets sucked into the game world, she's still, like, all human. But then she sees the band and then realizes, oh, I'm a cat... You know, she sees that they're all basically these, like I said, I don't call them furries, but... their animal forms playing, and she realized that she's one of them now.
Gotcha. And question two, how long till the episode where they start chasing purple dragons?
I don't know. The second episode is pretty much about this other band that the company has, Shingon Crimsons, which is basically a Visual K band. And it's all a bunch of animal boys. Which after I saw that, I'm just like, yep, this is like I said, it's my second favorite show of the season. And I'm like, I'm in this to the end.
Awesome, awesome.
I forgot to mention, this show is like very brightly colored when it's in the game world. It's like neon colors all over the place. And it's also kind of, the backgrounds are dark, but I guess it just fits in with the neon color pattern. I almost want to try to take a hit of acid, because I think I'd probably even enjoy the show even more then.
I'll give you a cell phone number after the show.
No, I just love it for what it is. I mean, it's just like I said, it's campy, it's fun. I'm just gonna ride this crazy train all the way to the end.
Right on. I'll definitely have to add that one to my watch list.
Yeah, it's a show that, it's like I said, it doesn't take itself seriously, at least so far. If it does, I think it'll roll in it. But yeah, it's kind of, like I said, it's not high entertainment. It's just, again, it's just a kind of, it's turn your brain off entertainment at its finest. So what about you guys?
All right, and then I guess I'll start off with my first. Any of you who have been reading the site know that I've been watching Is It Wrong to Pick Up Girls in the Dungeon? Or popularly known as Damachi, or the show with the lily boob girl with the blue string.
Or as I'm going to be called... Call it a Fuck Hestia.
Okay, Fuck Hestia works too. Anyway. This is a series that's set in this world of, like, swords and sorcery, Dungeons and Dragons type stuff. And in this realm, the gods have chosen to descend to Earth to live out with humanity, to kind of share in the hardship and really experience the thrill of living, as opposed to just staying cooped up in the Celestial Kingdoms. In doing so, they give up their powers, except for one. By offering their blessing to their followers, those followers become part of what they call a familia. And these followers are able to venture into the dungeons that lead beneath the earth, where monsters reside, to fight for great justice and to bring wealth and renown to the familia in general. This one revolves around one familia, which is the Hestia familia, which has one member, a guy called Bel Crannel. He's kind of dense, and he's a new adventurer, but one day when he goes into the dungeon, he finds himself outmatched staring down the muzzle of a minotaur. And just moments before he is pounded into a bright red paste, which would have made this show a million times better, by the way, is a twist opening. But anyway, he's saved by this girl, this gorgeous blonde girl. And unfortunately, he doesn't have much of a name yet, but that's quickly solved. And she's known as Eyes Wallenstein. She is one of the most gifted swords people in the land. So Belle's goal becomes, I have to get strong enough to win this girl over while serving my familia. So basically, save the world, get the girl, you know, for better or worse. But at the same time, he has a bit of an admirer. Hestia, the goddess of his familia, pretty much has the hots for him. Pretty badly, too. Like, most of her dialogue, when she's around him, is pretty perverted in nature. Like, she'll say, we're not going to sleep tonight. She tries to gammon bet. She tries to flirt with him. It's kind of off-putting. She looks like a 10-year-old girl with tits. But Bell's not much better. He's pretty much a binary toggle. He has two personalities. One, I'm going to get stronger so I can make Eyes happy. Two, I gotta do everything for the familia. That's literally it. He has no fucking personality. Sorry,
my eardrums.
Whoa there. It's almost like you just realized that you're describing Urusei Yatsura.
It almost sounds like, Mike, that you hate the show. You don't like the show.
Well, I don't hate the show. I hate Bell. And I hate Hestia. They're, without a doubt, the worst things about this show. Bell is little more than a husk. I mean, this is my criticism about the Twilight books. The main character has no personality. She's just a husk for the viewer to slide into and become an avatar. It's really, that's it. It's wish fulfillment on the worst scale.
I agree. I mean, that Lum and that Ataru, same problem.
See, the thing is, at least Ataru's funny.
That is true. He is funny.
Bell is not. At all. A block of goddamn wood can emote better. Seriously. Anyway. Hestia's not much better. When she's around Bell, like I said, all she does is flirt, 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 flirt. And it really gets to the point where it's supposed to be comical, but it is, I wouldn't say off-putting, but distracting. It pulls the viewer out of the experience, because it's really, how's she going to flirt with them next? What's she going to do to try and get them in bed?
I don't know, maybe she'll take them string off her tits or something, I don't know.
Yeah, but then how are we going to have the fashy cosplay?
Point taken.
And what kills me is, she has potential to be a good character, because the moment they pull her away from Belle, episode 2, there's actually a section where she's in, like, the presence of other gods. She's shown to be an actually interesting character. I mean, she actually has motivation, desires. She becomes a person. And as soon as she sees Belle in that episode, boom, it's gone again. I mean, that kills me. Because
it's terrible?
It's terrible, yeah. It's awful. And the thing, it really kills me because the rest of the world is so cool. I mean, I love the world. I love the secondary characters. I love the art style. But I cannot stand those two lead characters. They are awful. Just fucking awful.
Why don't you say what you really feel?
I think he is.
It stinks.
Now, I will just say, I actually was at least somewhat interested in this show. Like, I never did actually check any of it out. Then the Hestia fan art started showing up on my timeline, and I'm like, fuck no, I'm not watching the show. I'm tired of seeing Hestia. Like, I like lolis, and I like opi lolis. It's the best of both worlds. But every time I see Hestia, it's just like, nope, It's just like, I just want to flip the table over. I'm just like, nope, not going to fucking do it. So my interest in the show went from, I might check it out in the future, to now, and to the nope pile. I'm not touching out the 10-foot pole.
Oh, man. Save yourself the frustration. Just
yeah, I'm not going to. Because like that, all that has to be fan art, so I'm just like, no. And I'm tired of seeing that blue fucking string everywhere now. Like, I don't think I could even, like, look at it on, like, just even something completely out of the anime circle. Like, I couldn't even see it on a pat, on, like, a gift, and just not, like, want to, like, throw it across the room.
Anyway, I think I've said my two cents on it, so what are you watching, Matt?
I guess I'll get to the obvious later. I'll talk about Sound Euphonium, which I'm a little bit surprised I'm the first one to talk about this, but maybe not so much because I was a band geek. You know, okay, so I'll get the usual crap out of the way with Kyoto Animation. It's basically a show about cute girls being cute. And the backdrop is a concert band where the main character is, you know, she's just starting high school, and she came off sort of a difficult relationship with a classmate from her former school who happens to be in the concert band at the new school. So there's that little bit of intrigue or tension or whatnot. She plays the euphonium, which I was surprised to hear of an instrument that I really hadn't heard about before. It appears to be similar to it's similar to an instrument that appears in a lot of American high school bands, namely the baritone. But it's a little bit different in that it has a wider bore and a wider bell. So maybe like a fuller sound, I guess you would say it has. But other than that, it's very similar to the baritone. Anyway, the first couple episodes, which is pretty much all I've seen, sort of get that going. You know, you have the backdrop of the middle school band, and they're, you know, they were, you know, as we understand it, they were pretty good. And then they get to high school, and this new band is, as we understand it, very much not good. And we have, you know, these few characters that had experience in bands before, starting up with the band in their new school. So it really hasn't gotten into like the drama, which I assume is going to be plentiful. Other than the main character and her friend sort of, you know, declaring a truce from what they had sort of fought about before. I know I'm being a little bit cryptic about this, but because it's only been a couple of episodes by now, I didn't really want to spoil anything for anyone who's interested in watching the show. I'll just say that I'm interested in the show, and the fact that it's Kyoto Animation, and they're, you know, even though they're doing what they do, I find that it's good enough to continue, so I think I may watch it through this season at least. I don't know how far it'll go, but you know, it's not bad.
I'm also enjoying Sound Euphonium. In particular, I really like the head of the bass section.
Oh yeah, Asuka.
She is great,
and she also plays the euphonium. But yeah, she's like got this boundless energy and enthusiasm for what she does. And I know, Mike, you mentioned that you have a couple musician friends that are like that, and I think that's actually kind of unusual, especially for a professional musician to have that kind of attitude. It's nice to see. She's really funny. It's one of the reasons why I'm looking forward to the next episode.
It's not that unusual. I mean, to be honest, musicians are a very interesting group of people. And you're always going to get someone like that in at least a good, close knit group of friends. There's always going to be that quirky one.
Yeah, I guess somebody who's sort of coming up and hasn't... I would say it's probably somebody that hasn't been in the scene that long of a time, because the musicians that I've met are kind of, you know, they obviously enjoy what they're doing, but they're kind of almost a little bit tired. You know, it's very exhausting work.
Oh, it is. It's soul crushing work. I mean, you put a lot into it. And it doesn't always guarantee you're going to get something out. So, yeah. I mean, I can definitely see where the tiredness comes from.
Yeah, this is one I'm not watching because I wasn't. And I had other stuff on my plate. And I might, in the future, go check it out, like, later this year or next year. I mean, because I never was... I never was in band in, like, high school. I just didn't... Like, I played instruments when I was in elementary school, but then I just kind of stopped playing, and I guess maybe because the fact that I wasn't in, like, you know, like a band geek in school, maybe that's just why my interest in this show just isn't, or my interest in checking out the show isn't, like, real high. I mean, it sounds like, from what you guys say, it sounds like it sounds like a pretty good show.
It really is. I went in with low expectations, and I've been pleasantly surprised. It's got a good vibe to it. The sense of humor, when it's on, it really works. And the characters are surprisingly strong.
Might have to add it to my stuff to check out later this year, the list.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Just don't put it on your Blu-ray buy list, because Ponycan's got it.
Yeah, well.
And, you know, $90 for 4 episodes is going to get pricey fast.
Well, hey, if it's a show I like enough to buy, I might get it, but...
Yeah, true.
I mean, I'm not going to make divulge this into a price debate, so...
I almost wonder if I should be a little bit happy that that Ponycan invested in this, because maybe there will be a decent amount of music to it. It's hard to say, obviously.
Who knows?
True, and...
Not so much so far.
True, and Ponycan's releases have been pretty good about including a soundtrack with each volume, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of their thing. I mean, they do animation on the other side.
True enough. I mean, I come down on the prices, but looking at what they give you, it's really not terrible. I mean, you do get, like, full soundtrack volumes, which are... They retail for about $30 a pop, and they do throw in usually something like... appreciable that can come with it. I mean, it's still ungodly expensive, don't get me wrong, but at least they're trying to give you a package that's more justifiable for the price.
Well, I don't know if I would go that far. You're basically paying for all of the things that are in it.
Well, yeah, pretty much.
At full retail.
Pretty much.
And if that's what you want, then go for it.
Definitely. Yeah, if you get a chance, Anthony, definitely give Soundyphonium a watch.
Yeah, I'll do that.
There's a little bit of nostalgia there. I mean, I was in a band in high school and last couple of years of middle school, and there were some good times there. And I think the show is probably going to, you know, focus on the good times more than the music, but that's okay. I think I'll like it. Because let's face it, there's not going to be any original music coming out of this show.
No. It's all going to be classical, I'm guessing. All right, Anthony, what's your second show?
My second show, which is actually my favorite of the season, is My Love Story. So this one focuses around two friends, Takeo Ogura and Makoto Sunokawa. Now... Takeo is sort of a man's man, you know, even though he's a first-year high school student. He's built like a workhorse. He's very muscular. He has a black belt in judo, and he can also knock a guy out in one punch. But he's also very ugly. And because of that, he doesn't get the girl. But what the girls don't realize is that he, under all that, under everything, under all, you know, his baseless workhorse body, is a heart of gold. However, though, the girls all go for Tsunekawa, his Bishonen best friend, who he summarily rejects in, let's just say, very not nice ways. Basically, he'll just, because it showed one where they were in kindergarten, and this girl, she's like, I like you, Tsunekawa, and he's just like, I don't like you. And so, of course, she cries about it. Well, so Takeo's just kind of comments that he's just not going to get the girl, ever. So one day, they're on a train, and Tsunekawa tells him, hey, that guy over there looks suspicious. So Takeo, being much taller than Tsunekawa, sees that this guy's essentially groping this girl. So he goes up to her, or goes up to the guy, and grabs him and says, we're getting off at the next station. And this girl, who we find her name is Yamato, thanks him. And of course, when he sees her, he falls in love. So they get to the police station with the dude, and there's a disagreement. He basically knocks the guy out and gets suspended from school from it. So Yamato comes over and it's just like, I want to thank you for, you know, saving me on the train the other day. And Takeo's basically kind of thick-headed that he can't see that this girl's starting to fall for him. He thinks that she likes Tsunekawa. So she leaves her phone there at his apartment, which then a few days later, I think it's either next day or a few days later, he gives it back to her and she makes some macarons by hand. And he just falls in love with them. But again, he's doesn't realize that she's got the hots for him, but realizes that he thinks, oh, well, he has hots for Tsunekawa, so I'm going to help him. Now, I will say a couple things. First, this is by Madhouse, so it's going to look good, and it does. Background art is beautiful. Character designs are really close to the manga. There isn't a whole lot of animation, but in this first episode, it wasn't really necessary. I will say that, now, I have read the first volume of the manga, and the first episode was pretty faithful to the first chapter of the manga. They did cut a few things out, which actually ended up getting put into the second episode. The one thing I did like, though, that they kept over was Takeo's facial expression. Some of his are fucking gold. Especially when he's the macaroons, and I can't do it here because I don't have my camera on, but that is just, it's hilarious. The other thing I think that helps so far with this adaptation is the director, which is Morio Asaka, who has a lot of experience with romance shows. He's directed something such as, or shows that have at least some form of romance in them, such as Cardcaptor Sakura, Chobits. He did Nana, and I think he also did one of Mike's favorite shows, Galaxy Angel.
Woo!
Yeah. Now, I do have one complaint about the show so far, and that is the voice of Yamato, Megumi Han, who her mom's actually was a famous seiyu, Keiko Han, who did the voice of Luna in Sailor Moon. Megumi sounds a little too high-pitched for Yamato. On the second episode, it did seem a little better, but still, though, it just sounded a little too squeaky for my taste, at least of what I think the character she should sound like. Now, I don't know how faithful this is going to be. It seemed like the second, I have to look through the manga again, at least the first volume, but it seemed like the second episode is pretty faithful. But yeah, if you like romance comedies or even shoujo romance shows, I'd say check this out. I mean, because this season we have 11, at least shows with some form of romance in it. There's 11 of them this season, and I'd say this is probably one of the top. Again, if you like badass shows, do check it out.
I'm also watching this, and I have to admit, I really am digging it.
Yeah, it is great.
And it should also be noted that the director also did a show that that more people really should watch, Shihayafuru.
Yeah, that's when I tried to get into that one. I couldn't get into that.
Eh, it's not
I guess
because
I don't care. I'm just like, nah, not for me. I mean, I see the appeal of it, just wasn't for me.
Yeah, it's not for everyone. But I noticed that the character design was also on Shihayafuru, which you could see in a lot of the visual flavor. Like, there's a distinctness to the designs that you could really see in both shows that I thought was really interesting.
I just want to say, Chobits can eat a dick. Clamp wants their audiences to suffer.
No comment at this time.
That has always been the case, man. I mean, have you ever seen Magic Knight Ray Earth?
Yes, I have.
Then you know very damn well they want their audiences to suffer.
Yeah, I think the X TV show is the only thing where it's like, wow, it's like not only does this have an ending, but it's, you know, at least poetic and somewhat happy. And Holic was a little bit like that too. But yeah, it's definitely a Clamp thing, and I don't appreciate it. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I can't deny it. I mean, they are incredibly cruel to their characters and their readers. Like, they always find ways to make them just hate life, which is kind of interesting.
But now, anyways, getting back to my love story, I am glad they kept in the Takeo's facial expressions. I just love when those happen. Especially with the one with the Mac when he's eating the macarons. That was like that in the manga, and I just loved every time I saw that.
Yeah, that was a great expression.
Yeah, that is. So that is all I have to say about the shows I'm watching. Now, there are other ones I'm watching, too, besides these two, but I'm not going to bother talking about them. All right, so what about you, Mike?
Well, I was going into the show, I was actually kind of torn because there are two shows that I was watching that I really wanted to talk about. One was Renee. The other one was Plastic Memories. So I'm going to go with Plastic Memories because Renee is a Takahashi show. So if you've seen a Takahashi show, you know a Takahashi show. So
yeah.
So Plastic Memories is set in this distant future where there are these types of androids. I can't remember what they're called, unfortunately, off the top of my head. But they have a lifespan of these artificial souls, so they're pretty much the closest thing you can get to a human being without being a human. The only catch is they have a strict 9-year lifespan before they just start going, you know, breaking down and becoming soulless husks. Just like Bell Crannel.
Gifty is what the my androids are called.
That's it, Giftius. Alright, anyway, in this world, Takasa Mizugaki is a new recruit into the company that makes the Giftius, and he's in a division that reclaims the expiring units, which is basically they take him into a truck, they erase their memories, and they cart him off. And his partner, Isla, is basically a Giftia who's very, very young in appearance. Like, she's definitely a loli. And she's been in the business for most of her existence, so she's kind of seen the darker side of the whole reclamation, and it's really starting to wear on her. Anyway, the series revolves around Mizugaki and Isla as they go from... They get along, they work within this corporation and really start to see how life goes on as the reclaiming division in the office. I know I'm not describing this well, it's kind of an esoteric subject, but this one was actually recommended to me by LB Bryant from Otaku Review. And I will say this now, LB, you have recommended me one of the darkest shows I've ever seen. Within the first 10 minutes of the first episode, you have these people basically watching someone that they accepted as a son to them, saying their goodbyes, saying, you'll always be a son to us. Then watching the unit get deactivated and erased. So basically it's watching this thing die. And it's like watching a funeral procession type of thing. It is dark. But anyway, I have to admit, I really like this show. From the beginning, they actually nailed the whole tech job aspect, where it shows the main character walking to the office of this really big and shiny building. He's like, yeah, I'm of the tech division. They said, all right, go right this way. It's right around back. So he goes out back, and it's this little rundown little office area where they shove all the tech people. I thought that was great and highly indicative of a job in the tech industry. That aside, the characters are charming. I mean, the entire cast is just wonderful. The writing is surprisingly strong, and they do a great job of building emotion and really letting you kind of get attached to the characters. It's one where I did not expect to like this as much as I did, but I am really digging it so far.
Now, this actually happens to be one of the shows, all the shows I did check out, and I actually had something of an opposite reaction from it. Now, I will agree with Mike that it is a very dark show. You're basically dealing with death to an extent, because you're taking away somebody that essentially is a family to these people who don't necessarily want, obviously they don't want to part with their loved one, because this, their android, because, you know, they're like family. Now, where was my problem with the show? My problem was with the comedy. Okay. It felt really out of place to me that you're going to have this show about basically people retiring androids, and no, we're not talking about Blade Runner. But then throw in...
I was going
in,
to ask, you know, like, the only thing I cared about was, does this have any chance of being as good as Blade Runner?
It's not as dark, and no, it's not as dark, or there's nobody's getting shot, so...
Yeah, there's no Deckard.
Yeah, but the problem I have is you have this show about people basically getting, basically retrieving these androids, but then you throw in these comedic moments, which I just felt really out of place. Like, the one that really got to me was when they retrieve, spoiler, anybody listening, was when they retrieve that little girl from that old lady, where they're driving back, I guess, the office, and then the main dudes get to this, like, she's like, oh, I gotta pee. And I'm like, oh, that just... I don't know. That just, to me, that comedy just fell out of place.
It killed the mood of that section. Yeah. I can understand why they had to put the comedy in, because, I mean, if they didn't, this would become a very, very difficult watch. They really did. They really did need to be able to lighten the mood and get some high moments. But I am right that I am agreeing. I mean, you are right that moment was very ill placed, especially considering the gravity of what just happened.
Yeah, I mean, tonal shifts are okay. I mean, you could have a dark show with comedy in it. I mean, it's not... It's just this when those tonal shifts can sometimes be, like, don't work. And this one, it didn't work for me. Now, I will say it did look very nice. I did like the visuals. But I ended up actually just deciding I didn't want to see any more of it. Because I actually put it on, like, I'm just going to watch episode 10. I'm like, eh, I think I'll just throw it on the back burner, and then I just read some stuff for episode 3, and I'm just like, yeah, I don't think I'm gonna watch anymore, so I just dropped it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm enjoying it. It's a tough watch. I mean, because like you said, it's literally dealing with the concept of death, and the worst part is you have Isla, who is well aware that she's on her last legs there, you know?
At the end of her life too. Spoiler.
Well, they established that pretty early. That's not much of a spoiler, but I mean, it's like Mahara-matic kind of like that type of thing where you know from the outset she's on a time limit.
Yeah, well, at least this one they didn't have a countdown. The end of the episode goes X. This person has how many days till the activation? You know.
Well, time. Yeah,
you didn't have that.
That's just Gynax being Gynax, so you can't really help that one.
Yeah. Which, like I said, it looks. I mean, I like the character designs. I mean, it looked pretty good by A1 standards. But yeah, I just wasn't for... I just didn't wish to see any more of it.
Yeah, fair enough. So how about you, Matt? What's your second series?
Well, this is actually the only other thing that I'm watching right now. I've been a little bit slow on the uptake with this season. And I don't know. I'm not sure I see that changing anytime soon. So... I'm watching the I guess the second half of the new Fates Day Night. And I think all I really have to say about it is that it's, I mean, UFO Table is treating the Fate properties really well. I mean, I have no complaints other than, they're kind of, with this second half, they're kind of going at it a little bit slow. I mean, the episode that just aired is definitely back on track. But the one that happened before it was a little bit like, you know, you guys really couldn't have done a little bit more with this. Like, even if you look at something like Game of Thrones, there's a lot of things happening, but there's at least one significant moment in every episode. And the previous episode of Fate Stay Night was definitely not... it definitely did not fit that bill, but the most current one is pretty much back on track. I only hope that they don't like, I hope that they don't like alternate between, you know, whatever and holy shit, that just happened, you know?
I have to admit, I've been a bad fan. I'm a little behind on Fate.
You saw the original, right? I didn't, and so this is completely new to me, and I'd like to keep it that way.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying a word to you.
Although as I've professed before, I'm pretty much unspoilable. So if you actually told me everything that's going to happen, it wouldn't bother me, and I would continue watching it and still enjoy it. But you know, it's also fun to guess at what's going to happen.
Eh, fair enough.
That's pretty much all I had to say about that. I mean, I know I've talked about the show before. And it's really more of the same. It's just, it's really the only other thing that I'm watching this season. And it's still pretty good. So I have no complaints there.
All right. Very cool. Aren't you also watching I Can't Understand What My Husband Is Saying?
Yes, but I don't know. It's all right.
It is what it is, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's so... I mean, I didn't even think about it because every episode is like 3 minutes long, and it's just something that is there in my queue, otherwise I wouldn't even notice it. It's funny. I like it. It's just...
Fair enough.
I've already spent about half of the length of the show talking about it.
Alright, everybody, that's our show. Thanks for joining us. Remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. It really helps us out. And until next time, this is Mike Ferrer signing off.
This is Anthony Simpson, sign our bye-bye.
This is Matt Brown. Thanks for listening.
Have a great night, everybody.
Bye-bye.